today. So you want to get started, Dan?
Sure. Let me introduce myself. My name is Dr. Dave Walsh, and I, along with my daughter Erin, who will introduce herself in seconds, I'm co-founder of Spark and Stitch Institute and want to welcome you to the webinar, The Many Faces of Stress, How to Love Your Kid When They Kids When They Need It the Most.
Yeah, and it's, you know, normally here at Spark and Stitch Institute, we are obviously a father-daughter team. When we tend to do virtual meetings like this or sessions, we usually, he and I at least, try to be in the same room. And normally we try to meet you face-to-face. So lots of you potentially that are on the call, we've seen you in gymnasiums or auditoriums or even school cafeterias talking about what kids need to thrive and translating brain science into practical strategies for parents and educators. And of course, all of us are practicing social distancing, including my dad and I. So we're in separate rooms, but we're grateful to be able to be here with you today to continue to share, to continue to support you, and to continue to think about what does it mean to support kids in what is proving to be a really, really challenging time. So we'll tell you a little bit more about Spark and Stitch Institute at the end, but we know that you all are juggling a lot of different things right now. So we also know that you are here for the topic, The Many Faces of Stress. So I'm gonna share our slides with you now. We'll probably go to the side a little bit. And we'll dive right in. So again, I'm Erin Walsh, here with my dad, Dr. Dave Walsh, and we are with Spark and Stitch Institute. And, you know, when we created Spark and Stitch Institute together, we created the tagline, Parenting for Connection and Courage. And I think when we created that tagline, it felt like those were essential ingredients for kids thriving. And now, of course, as we are kind of into the heart of the COVID-19 pandemic, it's clear that those two ingredients are more essential than ever, that kids need both courage in this time as well as connection, which we'll be talking about today. But as a parent myself, I come to this work not just as a translator of the research, but as a parent. I know that this has not just demanded that I sort of nurture courage and connection in my kids, but that parenting during a pandemic requires courage and connection as well, and that this is a challenging and difficult time. And so I'm grateful that we can spend some time together online here connecting, supporting each other, sharing information that we hope acts as another layer of support as you navigate parenting from home, teaching from home, working from home, and that all of us are drawing on courage during this time to do what's best for each other and to do what's best for our kids. And so we are going to be talking a bit about connection in particular, as it relates to stress and the brain. Here at Spark and Stitch Institute, we have been translating brain science into practical strategies for you as parents, educators on the line, so that we can better understand what's going on in this miracle perched on top of our kids' shoulders, so that we can better understand them, connect with them, sort of decode challenging behaviors, and learn a bit more about ourselves as well. And so today's little mini session on the many faces of stress is no different. We are going to start by talking a little bit about the brain. And certainly, brain science can help us better understand stress, how we experience it, how our kids respond to it, what it means for us as parents. And here in the heart of the COVID-19 pandemic, stress is certainly on everyone's mind. We have gotten questions every single day pouring in about how do I handle my own stress? I can see my kids are under stress. All of the changes means that all of us are experiencing a great deal of challenge and uncertainty. So we're gonna take a little bit of time together to peer inside the brain to better understand how do we respond to stress and hopefully illuminate some of the ways that stress can show up in really unpredictable and sometimes even really challenging ways. So my dad is gonna dive into a little bit more about just a brief reminder of the brain science of stress.
So to say that we and all of our kids are under a great deal of stress right now in the midst of this worldwide crisis is probably an understatement. So let's do a very quick review, science review, of how the brain responds to stress. One of the things that's important for us to remember is the brain's primary job. The brains, although our brains enable us to do all sorts of amazing things, the brain's primary job is to keep us alive, survival. And when we remember that, then some of the ways that the brain responds make a little bit more sense. If the brain's primary job is to keep us alive, then one of the things that it better be good at is to detect and respond quickly to danger, to threat. Our brains are created in such a way that they do a remarkable job of doing that. So for example, if I am driving down the street and all of a sudden the car ahead of me has a blowout and starts to spin out of control, do I need to pull over to the side of the road, turn off the engine and say, okay, now what do I do? No. Within a split second, my heart rate will soar, my blood pressure will go up, I will grip that steering wheel, the chemicals in the brain, the adrenaline will flow. And all of that happens literally in milliseconds. And the part of the brain that's responsible for that is the interior part of the brain. In fact, in a situation like that, the last part of the brain to activate is the cortex, the outer part of the brain where we think. So we are actually reacting before we even know what we are reacting to, which is a wonderful way if we are going to survive. Well, not even in life and death situations, but in all sorts of situations which we interpret as threat, which we call stress, the brain really does activate in the lower parts of the brain. And so when we are dealing with stress, the part of the brain that is responsible for thinking, for rational problem solving, for emotional regulation, that's the cortex of the brain. That actually, when we're under a great deal of stress, the activity shifts away from that very important part of our brain down to the parts of the brain that are more responsible for survival. So we actually do a little bit less thinking and a lot more feeling and a lot more reacting. And so it's important to remember that's how our brain works. So when we're under stress, the brain kind of shuts down to a certain extent from the top to the bottom.
Yeah, the brain, this is a really good thing. I like to think of this as I consider my kids' brains, my own brain. It's as if sort of our feelings brain, our limbic brain, kind of hijacks the cortex, right? To make sure that we're responding in real time to the stressors or threats around us. So, you know, just as a brief reminder that we should be really grateful that our brains are wired this way, right? You know, if you just think of a simple example, I know that many of us are confined to our homes and practicing physical distancing right now, but if you'll just sort of walk with me in your imagination, even a simple trip up to the North Shore of Lake Superior in our imagination, for example. I'm using a Minnesota example because that's the state that I am speaking from today. But even just if we were to propel ourselves in our imagination to the shores of Lake Superior, there's some really obvious examples of where the stress response system or the survival system in the brain makes a ton of sense. And we should be really grateful that we're wired this way. So just imagine, if you will, that, you know, we're walking along the shores, walking along the trails, and our cortex, right, the thinking part of our brain is sort of ablaze and thinking about my goals and helping me manage my feelings and sort of making plans about where I might want to go and who I might want to be, right? Sort of activated my thinking brain and I'm fully engaged. Well, as I'm walking along, just imagine for a moment that all of a sudden, snap, a crack of a branch, right? If my stress response system were built to continue to walk along, sort of contemplating the higher order of things, we human beings wouldn't have gotten very far, right? Instead, my entire system is designed to stop, look, and listen, right? My feelings brain, my limbic brain, hijacks my thinking brain, my cortex, and says, hey, cortex, that's all nice, all this sort of frivolous higher order thinking stuff, but let's deal with safety first and figure out, is it a branch, right? Is it a bear? Once I figure out what it is, then we can re-engage from the bottom up, right? Once I says, oh, you know what? It actually wasn't a bear, it was just a branch, then I can actually go from this very reactive survival state up into maybe sort of an emotional, get some abstract thinking, and then re-engage my cortex for new learning. So you maybe have seen this happen, felt this happen in your own life. You maybe have felt this survival system or stress response system operate when you watch your kids. One of the ways, if those of you who have little kids have probably seen your kids' brains shut down from the bottom, from the top down, for example, when they're having a tantrum, right? This is not a time where they're engaging in complex, sophisticated thinking in their cortex, right? This is a time where they're in a very emotional and reactive space. Once they get back to calm, their brain can kind of re-engage from the bottom up and get to that place of new learning. And of course, it's not just about learning. I just want to revisit what my dad said, which is that the cortex is, of course, where we do some of that new learning and synthesis. It's also where we manage our big feelings. It's where we engage in perspective taking, so considering the thoughts or feelings of another person. It's where we are able to have creative problem solving, right? So the cortex is critical for a lot of the kind of behaviors that get us towards our goal, whether there are learning goals during the day or whether there are kind of behavior goals. And so stress has the possibility of kind of hijacking that part of the brain in order to activate the more emotional and reactive part of the brain. So that's just how our brains are wired. We're grateful for this for our survival, but it can make it difficult during times of great stress or perceived sense of threat. Because even though your kids might be not be encountering grizzly bears all the time, there are plenty of things in their sort of COVID-19 new world that their brain responds to in the exact same way.
So let's translate this theory that we've been talking about for a couple minutes now into a present day reality. Even though the example of the bear is a great one for understanding how the brain reacts, if we translate that to the present day, the stress that we and our kids are all experiencing right now in the midst of this, confronting this pandemic, are not bears. They are other things. So what I'd invite everyone to do is to use the chat feature and just chat in or just type in the types of stressors that you see your kids dealing with right now. It might be, you know, unable to get together with their friends. It might be, you know, distance learning is more stressful than face-to-face time with the teacher. So just take a minute or so to type in some of the stressors that you are that you and your kids are experiencing right now.
And we'll read them out to you because not everybody can see all of these, but we've got things flooding in from reacting to our stress. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Parents being at home, but not actually being able to interact with them because parents are trying to work. Sadness and depression about not seeing friends. How to pick complete and total change. So no schedule, no habits. Isolation from friends, changes to routine, distance learning, uncertainty, will it be harder? Yeah, having to cancel important things, having to cancel birthday parties, sports event, theater performances, can't see grandparents or caregivers regularly. There's a lot of folks coming and saying, just missing their friends, missing their routine. Looks like someone says, a lot of time with siblings, which maybe at the very beginning of social distancing was okay, but now we're a couple weeks in, many of us. And so some of those relationships have started to wear thin a bit. The idea that a virus is an invisible threat. So the actual fear that people are going to get sick, people have gotten sick, or what might happen. fear of a parent working at a grocery job or in the medical field. So actual real fears about the virus itself. Graduation, proms, banquets. So, you know, they're just sort of pouring in. This picture you see in front of you on the slide is actually not that far from the truth in terms of the brain is sort of consistently scanning its environment for potential stressors and threats. And it took all of you, you know, 20 seconds to very quickly be able to generate a list of quote unquote bears, right? Or perceived bears that kids are grappling with right now and that parents are grappling with as well. All of us have a set of bears that we are now trying to confront. Things like uncertainty. I see people writing in about financial uncertainty. When will this end? What can we do? Should we be planning on this for the fall? What about the elders in our community? Right, so these bears are real. They are abundant right now. And of course, every one of us experiences a different set of them. So for some families whose parents have just lost, if you've just lost a job, right, financial security is a huge stressor in your life. And depending upon the age of your kid, they're picking up on that as well. For others, it's just uncertainty and not quite certain what's going to happen. So it's no surprise to any of you who've joined us this afternoon that there are a lot of stressors. There's a lot of new stressors and there's a lot of uncertainty. And as we confront lack of routine, lack of habit, not seeing friends, what does that shutting down actually look like? As we think about the brain kind of confronting these all the way from mini bears up to big bears, what does that actually look like? Well, the reason we really wanted to put this session together is because what that looks like is as varied as there are children in your homes. And sometimes that shutting down, that stress response going into, if our kids are heading into their feelings brain, can very much evoke empathy in us as parents. So your child might be exhibiting stress or worry, whether they are an 18-year-old or an 8-year-old, as needing more snuggles, needing more hugs, needing more time together. When our kids manifest stress and worry as this, as parents, while it is sometimes overwhelming to have a very worried child, the path towards them seems fairly clear, right? They're worried, they need me, they want me to comfort them, I see my path towards them, and I can offer that kind of safety and comfort. But typically what we know about kids and stress, and by the way, us adults too, is that this isn't always the main face of stress. Children rarely turn to us and say in an articulate way, I'm feeling very worried about the economic uncertainty in our economy, and I would like a hug in order to feel better, right? If that were the primary way that kids handled stress, we may not even need this online session because we kind of know what to do. We know how to offer that kind of comfort. We have to be slightly better detectives when it comes to kids and stress because there are many other faces of stress. One of the other things we can look for is changes in behavior. So one of the things that we'll start to see is, you know, sometimes people talk about these as regressions or backslides. You know, I like to think of them just as a child trying to figure out kind of how to get comfort, how to get sort of back in control in a lot of uncertainty. So for example, you might see a child who was easily going to sleep on their own all of a sudden want to sleep in your bed at night. You may see a child who had put all their stuffed animals away in the basement, all of a sudden a teenager wants to get their stuffed animals back out. Or a child who's just been potty trained who all of a sudden is having tons of accidents, right? So they may not be saying to us, I'm feeling a lot of stress, but watching for some of these behavior changes are indications that they're absorbing it from the world around them. And so that's one thing that we can look for. One of the faces of stress is just behavior changes where they could do something one day and then they can't do it the next. Just because a child can do something some of the time does not mean that they can do it all the time. Stress changes our sort of capacities and capabilities to be able to, you know, do some of these behaviors. So that's one thing to look out for. The other thing that is very clear is that while we have some kids who are reaching out, they evoke empathy in the adults around us, other kids respond to stress like this tiny isolated porcupine on the trail. And sometimes this response to stress is very disorienting to us as parents. It's the sort of get away from me, prickle out what comes, the sort of manifestation of this stress is to kind of throw barbs or just throw thorns. And this can also, the porcupine approach to stress, or it's not really an approach, the porcupine face of stress in children and teens can take on a lot of different manifestations, right? So here are a few that we know of, right? One of the faces of stress, this is really common for those of you parenting teenagers, is to use humor, sort of disengagement, this idea of sort of not taking it seriously. So why are you making such a big deal? Everybody's talking about this, or seemingly to completely not care about what's going on except for how it impacts their own life. Or using sometimes what feels like sort of inappropriate humor, like in the face of something that feels very serious to you. This is a really common face of stress, especially amongst adolescents. The second one is classic porcupine mode, right? So your kid, anywhere from, you know, elementary all the way through high school, must say, no, I don't have any questions about the coronavirus. I'm totally fine. And then they're building their Legos or they're doing, an online essay for school. And all of a sudden they are throwing something across the room, raging, running upstairs and slamming their door, right? No, this isn't about the virus. But that sort of what we call stress coming out sideways is very, very common. Another face is apathy, lethargy, wanting to sleep. This is especially common in teenagers as well. They're already sleep deprived, but you might find your teenager just wanting to sleep kind of all the time. Just, it's too much. I want to shut down and go away. You might also, another face is just overdrive, right? So instead of checking out, I deeply check in. So this is the kid who's very worried about every assignment that's happening online, wants to do it, make sure it's absolutely right, overachieving to try to get some control of the situation. And so as I'm walking through some of these faces of stress that are a bit less obvious and more difficult for us as parents, while we talk about this, I'd love for you to use the chat feature again to let us know if any of these resonate. Have you seen these? So I see one participant said, I have seen every single one of these from my 14-year-old. Yeah. And if there's any faces of stress that you're seeing or challenging behaviors that you're seeing during this time, let us know kind of what are the faces of stress that you have seen in your child during this time. Yeah. So my teenager is oversleeping and seems tired all day. Yes, this is sort of a classic stress response, which is I just sort of want to shut it down. When I sleep, at least I don't have to think about it. So just exhausted, right? So shutting down, using screen time as a way to cope. So in some ways, screens are a great way to connect. But when we're just constantly using screens as sort of a soothing mechanism, that can be tricky as well. So we see more folks saying all of these things. I have seen every single one of them. So my high-achieving middle school child is anxious about sort of maybe in the overachieving mode, making sure that all of that uncertainty around academics is nailed down. Making sure, right? So if the world is in chaos, but I have to figure out this online learning thing, that can be the funnel for a lot of my anxiety. So we have other participants saying, I've seen or heard about every one of these stress reactions among my adult friends. Thank you for bringing that up as well. We are not immune to this. Our brains, our cortex, the science my dad described is exactly how we respond to stress as well. This is not just a child thing. My college kid is a porcupine, and then I have a high achiever and a perfectionist, right? So why is it important for us to name the other faces of stress? One of the reasons it's important to name them is because these are harder. it's way easier if you have a kid who's coming to you crying and saying, I need a hug because I'm worried about COVID-19, to find the path towards empathy and connection. It is way harder when we are already stressed and your teenager is throwing something against the wall or your five-year-old is tantruming, for you to greet that with some sort of empathy for understanding the root cause of it. It's much easier for us to misinterpret these faces of stress as taking it personally, right? You're doing this to me. Where we start to respond in ways that aren't really helping them manage the stress, right? So all of a sudden a porcupine comes at you, and what happens to us? We turn into porcupines as well. And all of a sudden we're sort of, thorn to thorn, if you will. And so these faces of stress are really exhausting for us, because one of our jobs as parents is that we have a cortex that is wired, right? It's fully developed as an adult, but it's tired, especially in times of great stress. And so we can very quickly get pulled into our limbic brain, our reactive brain. And especially if the face of stress that our kid is exhibiting is very triggering, then we go into stress response, and all of a sudden we're limbic brain to limbic brain. And so the question becomes, as we think about how do we grapple with stress going forward, we do have some tools in our toolkit that we can use as we navigate this and as our kids do too. Dad, do you want to talk a little bit about too much stress?
We're going to now start to talk about, okay, so what do we do? Well, what we know about when stress is, we all have various levels of stress, even when there isn't a crisis going on. But what we know is that not all stress is bad. What stress becomes bad or toxic when there's too much of it, when it goes on for too long, and very importantly, when there's too little help. Now, where we have the opportunity to intervene at this point in time is that third one, too little help. Given the what's going on with the pandemic, we can't really, we can't solve the pandemic right now. The scientists tell us this is going to go on for a while. And so that means it might go on longer than any of us would like it. Any of us would find healthy. Where we can intervene, however, is making sure that that our kids don't have to deal with this with too little help. One of the things that we know from a ton of research is that to help any of us and to help our kids get through very challenging and difficult situations is connection with caring adults. There's no more effective, the quote from Dr. Bruce Perry, who's one of the leading experts on the impact of stress on children, there's no more effective neurological intervention to stress than a safe relationship. But of course, how do we do this when our kids are acting like porcupines? And Aaron, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that's what we want to just wrap up and then get some questions, because what we know is that what our kids need is that safe and caring relationship. They will remember the best thing we can do for their nervous system and their stress response is to create a safe and supportive, organized environment for them. But that becomes really, really tricky when they're maybe actively pushing us away, when their behavior is really aggravating. And so at that point, sometimes we think about connection. If we look at someone just asked, can we go back to this quote? When we think about building a safe relationship during this time, sometimes culturally we think about, what we need to be doing as parents is connect. And we have this idea that connection is this idyllic, beautiful, happy thing where we're only, we're having deep, meaningful conversations with our kids. We're sharing joy. We're having family time that looks like it'd be put on Pinterest tonight. And certainly we want infusions of joy and that kind of sort of more quote unquote ideal time with our kids right now. But we also have to get real about what it looks like to build safe and supportive relationships in a time where we're all feeling a lot of strain. And at that point, connection doesn't just equal fun. Connection doesn't just equal board game night and telling each other how much we love about each other, though those are important. One of the things that we want to do if we're parenting kids for whom the faces of stress are more challenging is to communicate in as many ways as we can that our relationship can handle all of these big feelings. that when you porcupine, I don't go immediately to my porcupine and we retreat to opposite sides of the house, that we still find our way towards each other, even in challenging times. And so learning how to, through our actions, through our the structure that we set up, through our own stress management strategies, to communicate to kids that our relationship can handle your big feelings, that our relationship can handle the stress and uncertainty of this time, becomes really important. And I love the, there were a number of people who chatted in and said, you know, as I'm looking at these, the faces of stress, this isn't just kids, this is us too. So as we consider what it's going to take to be able to communicate to our kids, yes, our relationship can handle your big feelings, we have to be taking pretty good care of ourselves. Because if we're constantly in stress response mode, where our cortex has been hijacked by our limbic brain, then having empathy for our kids and handling their big feelings becomes really important. So it's just a reminder that right now you parents are doing an extraordinary thing, right? Many of you are working, parenting, and teaching all at the same time in a closed space amidst explosions of big feelings and amidst a house where the cortex, the thinking part of the brain, the considerate part of the brain, is often being hijacked by the feelings brain. And all of those are full-time jobs. So part of our first task as we think about how do we form relationships is to remember the sort of three steps to, you know, basically greeting stressful kids or working with stressed out kids. So Dad, you want to talk a little bit about these three steps. The first one becomes really important if we're ever going to get to the third.
So if these are the three ingredients to kind of handle stress for both ourselves and our kids, then let's go through each of them briefly. Calm, remain calm. Now, that's, of course, everybody on this webinar knows that is much easier said than done. So let's break it down into two different steps. Let's talk about calm in the moment. When we're feeling that stress. And these are some of the suggestions. You know, it's fine to take a break. Even though we might be under shelter in place directives, get out, get a breath of fresh air, even if it's just walking around the house to take a break. Get in touch with things that can help us slow that internal engine down. Counting, taking a drink, petting a dog or a cat, or and then sometimes telling our kids, I need a little space right now. I'm feeling stressed, so let's see if we can take a break. Sharing the stress with a friend, and of course being gentle with ourselves. If you have just a couple seconds, just type in some of the things that you find helpful to kind of handle that in the moment strategy, and then we'll go on to what are some higher level stress management strategies. So we'll just take a couple seconds. If you could jot in some things that you find helpful, Aaron and I will read them off, and then we'll move along into the next one.
So step outside and breathe in the air, take a walk.
Yeah.
Just a reminder as these are coming in, breathing
breathe slowly. Very, very good. Smell the soup, blow on it because it's hot. All of these things can help. A lot of people are talking about taking a deep breath. That's very, very good advice. One of the things we can slow ourselves down, one of the things that we can manage is our own breathing rate, which can slow us down. Play an instrument, get in touch with nature, meditate, pray, classical music in the background. These are all excellent. So whatever ones work for you, don't forget to use them. But in addition, we can go on to the next slide, Aaron. In addition, we can take a step back and remember the things that are important, creating habits and rituals and seeing which ones we can hang on to. Our family has a family dinner every Sunday night. Well, we can't do that face-to-face, but we can do that virtually. So trying to find ways to keep some of those important rituals going. Exercise, people mentioned that already. Nutrition. Sometimes stress prompts us to eat a little bit more than we should and not necessarily good things. And so keeping a nutritionally balanced diet, watch out for all of the accelerants in our diet. So limit caffeine, limit alcohol, limit anything that's going to speed things up, because what we need to do is try to calm down. Sleep becomes very important, even though for many of us, I've certainly had difficulties sleeping in the last couple of weeks since this has all started.
I want to jump in here because Julie says, you know, we often say my amygdala is activated and I need a few minutes. Absolutely. What that is really metacognition, which is just learning about how the brain works. We can actually teach our kids that this is how our brain responds to stress. So you may have read various models of this. Some folks talk about, you know, Dr. Siegel talks about it as upstairs brain, downstairs brain. Some people have color-coded sections of the brain. All of these strategies, especially these in-the-moment strategies, are designed to help our brains re-engage from the bottom up, right? So wait, my amygdala is activated. I need a minute to re-engage the cortex. Because the cortex is where, when we're back to calm and we can activate our cortex, this is where we can start to feel some empathy for our kids, right? So to say, oh, you know what? Even though what they're screaming at me about is the shape of the cracker on their plate, it's not about the cracker, right? It's about the fact that they haven't had their normal routine or the fact that they're not sleeping well, right? But when we are activated as well, it's really easy for us to go to battle about the cracker or about the homework or about our rage that they're not engaging with the world enough and that they seem apathetic and lazy, right? That's when we're going limbic to limbic. All of these strategies are designed to help us cope, to get back to calm enough so that we have the cognitive room to take in the perspective of someone else. And that perspective is a perspective of our stressed out kids, where the faces of stress aren't always obvious, right? So as we wrap up and take some questions in this sort of mini session, a reminder, I know that some of you are clear on some of the science of stress already, that this can be a helpful loop for us to keep in mind. So in the weeks ahead, as you are working with your kids, as things start to get more strained or more hairy, or you think you get your feet under you and then the ground starts moving again, that keeping this calm, connecting coach cycle can be helpful. It's really easy for parents, especially, to want to run right to the coach step, right? Because you're busy. I'm trying to do a conference call. I'm trying to do this. I'm juggling 50 things. I'm stressed myself. So I'm just going to go in and try to fix it. Well, sometimes what we're trying to fix is not actually the source of what the strain is, right? So if you have a little kid and they are they're crying about their cracker, right? Fixing the cracker isn't necessarily what it's all about. So if we can slow things down, and that can look really different at different ages. So, right, we just talked about some strategies to get to calm, but before we start solving the problem, either for them or asking them to use their cortex to solve the problem, just taking a minute to do that connection piece, right? This is really hard, isn't it? Like, I know it's just really hard to not see your friends. I know there's not a lot I can do to solve the disappointment of not being able to have your birthday party, but I'm right here, right? And then as kids, if they do have more words for it, we can, you know, ask them, can you tell me a little bit more about it? So, and then once we're in calm and the cortex is re-engaged, then we can get to problem solving. Then we can get to coaching. With little kids, we might need to actually give them words when we're problem solving. So if they've just thrown everything against the wall because they're angry at you, you know, instead of saying, you know, use your words. Well, their words might be very far from what they can grapple with right now. So you can give them, coaching can be giving them words. You can say, I'm really mad at you right now. as kids get older and as they're gaining more of that problem-solving skills, that's the time where we can engage their cortex and say, I know you're disappointed. You know, we've had some time to sit with that. What do you think you can do next? You know, what's your next step? And that sort of coaching and problem-solving. If we rush right to that step, oftentimes we've sort of missed the opportunity to actually give them and model some stress recovery or stress management tools. And so we wanted to make sure this wasn't too long. We're gonna be doing these every Friday. This is the first of a series of little sessions on brain science and kids. But we do wanna make sure that we take some of your questions before the hour is up. And our final reminder is that stress lives in the body before it lives in the brain. So as you're thinking through these steps of, you know, calm, connect, and coach, it doesn't all have to be verbal. Oftentimes we, adults especially, want to talk. And sometimes just that power of, we need to take a break. We're going to take some breaths together. We're going to get the stress out by having a dance party or playing or running and moving our bodies can be much more helpful than immediately saying, okay, let's talk about it and what's your plan. If we're in limbic space, if we're in feelings brain, it's hard to get up to those, to that problem solving part that's all verbal. So we have, you know, we have one more message before we go, but we're already getting some questions in. So if you're parenting a porcupine, or you're parenting, you know, kids who have, or if you're experiencing any of those spaces of stress, let us know. How are you doing? We'll take a few questions, and then we'll be sure to send up some follow-up resources as well. So let's see. Yeah, when a child like a porcupine, yeah, and then a child alone in their room by choice, how do we communicate that we are there? I love that. Without being intrusive or abandoning. Yep. Yeah, so absolutely. Sometimes this, and Dad, why don't you?
Yeah, I think one of the things that might be helpful is to acknowledge, you know, depending on the child, you know, a family check-in might be helpful. You know, giving people permission to talk about what is frustrating and then not judging responses. You know, people might, you know, kids might say, you know, I'm sick of being here. You know, rather than trying to talk them out of it and make them feel better about it, just acknowledging, yes, it's hard. So acknowledging, check-in, some rituals, giving kids an opportunity to talk about what are some of the positive things that are happening and what are some of the things that are really hard, and acknowledging those can be, you know, can be a way to connect with our kids without being intrusive or without abandoning them.
And I'll just say one more thing, Denise, because I parent, one of my children is more of a porcupine who needs space. So getting close to him, if he is shutting down from the top down and is in a stress reaction mode, getting close to him or trying to say a lot to him is not what's gonna work. So coaching him to say, I think it's okay for kids to say, you know what, I need space right now, and giving them that time to cool down. And I think what we can say is it's very different to say, you know, please, yes, take space and I'm right here when you're ready to talk, or when you're ready for a hug, or when you're ready to come back. It's really different than isolation that comes off as more of punishment, right? So don't cry in front of me right now. You can only come out of your room when you're done crying, right? So space doesn't have to feel like isolation. It can feel like a really important stress recovery tool for a kid. So giving them that space and then just checking in. So after a couple minutes, sometimes kids have caught ahead of time to calm down enough that they'll then invite your presence, even if they say, get out of here, right? Do you need more space or are you ready? Right. And if they say, I need more space, then say, great, I'll check in a couple minutes. I'm right here. Right. And so I think giving them that space becomes really important. And just how we message around it helps them understand that just because they're far away doesn't mean we're saying, you know, your big feelings don't belong here.
Yeah. Question there. Will this be, here's a very practical question. Will this webinar be available to view another time? It is being recorded. And so, yes, it will be available for others to view it at another time.
Yeah, we'll be loading every video in this series onto our website. So we'll post a link to that at the end, too, if you'd like to forward it on to friends. because we know not everybody could be here live, and then other folks as well. So why don't we answer a couple more, it's not quite 1 o'clock yet. Let's answer a couple more questions, Dad. Building structure into the day during this time has helped alleviate some of that stress. So that makes a ton of sense, right? So the brain responds well to organization, right? We get, if things are too boring, that's not great for the brain either. But in general structure, what we think of is the brain is, it loves safety, organization, and support, right? So what's happened now is all of the habits and all of the routines have gone out the window. So having some kind of structure, what it does is helps the brain sort of know, okay, well, this is what I can count on in the day. There's a lot of uncertainties, but here's what is certain. So really simple things like making sure the kids get dressed in the morning. Our kids were shocked to hear that we needed them to get out of their pajamas. And we said, you can stay in your pajamas on weekends, but you have to get dressed on these weekdays so that we have some kind of routine. For teenagers, you want to create a lot of agency and choice within that structure. So maybe you have a modified wake-up time that's maybe a little later than during the school year. And then you have some kind of, this is learning time, this is free time. And then within that, we can, with older teens, we want to give them a lot of agency and power because the spaces that have traditionally given them agency and power, their friends and time away from us, have been stripped away right now. So we want to create structure, but then give them a lot of choice within that. So, maybe we can do a whole sharing at some point about the various ways we're all trying to create structure, as long as we are gentle with ourselves when it inevitably falls apart, because we're all juggling so much right now. I think we have time for a couple more questions. This is really lovely from Pegasus Springs. Even in the midst of all this difficulty and uncertainty, there have been stories from families and organizations that have had positive realizations about connection, as if we've been forced to step off of the endless treadmill. You think it's a good idea to help kids have an awareness of these lessons as well, so that these seeds can continue to grow for us when we eventually get out of this crisis. Yes, I love that. I think the more that we can find opportunities, just because we're acknowledging that it's hard and acknowledging our kids' stress, doesn't mean that we also don't use this as an opportunity to mirror back, magnify and strengthen family strengths. So we can model that. We've gotten a lot of questions from parents who are saying, my teenager doesn't have any capacity right now to see that this is actually could be a time for family time or for connecting in ways that we haven't before. So rather than sort of push that idea, I think modeling it can become really helpful. So having a gratitude practice around the dinner table, knowing that if your kid opts out and says, I'm not grateful for anything today, take a deep breath, call on the power of your cortex, and model your own gratitude. I'm really grateful that as a family, we have a warm house, or that we have each other. And finding different ways for them to actively notice some of the strengths, some of the things that are joyful in the home, and ways that they can help their broader community, right? Can be very helpful to be a helper. And I think all of that speaks to that. It's not just about getting through, but there might be some things we can practice that will help us when we can get through this as well. Let's see, we have a lot of thank yous. Will, you're welcome. Let's see, Dad, anything else that you're seeing in the list?
What happens when your teen absolutely resists your attempts to create structure, even a to-do list? I think one of the things that might help with that is to give them a hand in constructing that. So, let's together figure out, how we're gonna spend the day. And they might not want any part of that, but, given the question, this is somebody who's resisting that, say, well, you'll have a voice in this. And so, rather than me just making up a structure, let's do it together in a way that makes sense. So giving them some agency in that. I think structure will be important for all of us, particularly because it looks like these restrictions that most of us are under are going to continue for a while.
Yeah.
Plan family workouts and activities. I think it's time for creativity. I've been playing card games with some of my grandkids over the internet. and having a lot of fun with it. And so, using our creativity, and we do have the advantage of all of this technology to kind of help us stay connected, even when we can't do that face to face.
You know, and I know we're coming up to our time here, and I'm seeing some folks, this beautiful sharing. I have to find it now, but you know, this idea that it's okay to say to your kids, like, I'm having a really hard day. I'm really sad today, or giving your kids permission, that there are going to be good days and there are going to be bad days. And our challenge as parents is to remember that just because your child is having a bad day, or this week your teenager is totally resisting schedule, doesn't mean that that's going to be the same every single day to the end of this, to the end of the crisis, right? So giving ourselves permission, just because you can do things some of the time doesn't mean you can do them all the time. And that's the same for our kids when we're under stress. And so giving yourself permission to have a good day, giving yourself permission to have a bad day, becomes really, really important, because we just laid out this beautiful, right? First, we're going to breathe, and we're going to exercise, and, you know, we're going to calm. Then we're going to communicate not just the warm and fuzzy version of connection, but the hard stuff. We're going to communicate to our kids, our relationship can handle your big feelings. It's going to be messy. It's going to be complicated. We don't know exactly the path, but I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. That's the kind of connection we're talking about. Once we've done that, then we can get to that coaching. But in that beautiful circle, it makes it look like it's this delightful cycle where everybody's just, oh good, we took the webinar and now we're calm, we're connected, and we're coaching. There are going to be days where we blow up. There are going to be days where our limbic brain is in charge. There are going to be days where the porcupine response of your teenager or your four-year-old drives you to the edge. And so I just want to end by adding a fourth step, that we are all human, and that part of what we're modeling for our kids is our ability to repair. So if we blow up, if we have a bad day, it's our willingness to come back and say, we're going to repair the relationship. We're going to repair the connection. You know, I was really angry, but I shouldn't have said those things. I wish I hadn't said that to you. What do we need to do to move forward? Can we have a fresh start this morning? I know that yesterday I was on you all day about getting your schoolwork done. It didn't feel good to you. It didn't feel good to me. What can we do to do a fresh start today? And giving yourself the sort of grace that your brain needs. We are all wired full, we're all here as adults on this webinar, and that means that our cortex is wired, but it's tired. And you are undergoing a lot of stress too. So give yourselves the opportunity not to feel shame when you need to do repair, but to know that you're modeling how to sort of mess up and make up, which is part of how relationships work. And that's what you're doing with your kids as well. So thank you so much for joining us. This is the first of our Sparked Insight series. And we'll be doing one next Friday it's Time to Reassess, Avoiding Power Struggles with Your Kids During a Pandemic. So really that one is going to be about limits and consequences. So just because our kids are under stress doesn't mean that all behavior is a go, right? Doesn't mean that they get to do whatever they want. But what does it look like to have limits and consequences during times of stress? And what do we need to readjust to make sure we're not constantly battling with our little kids and our teens? So if you're interested, and if this has been helpful, we'd love to see you virtually here again next week. In the meantime, you can always leave with this reminder that brain science tells us it's a time to be gentle. It's a time to be gentle with yourself. It's a time to be gentle with your kids. And in the meantime, we'd love to keep supporting you. So we'll keep trying to write. We'll keep trying to do these free little online sessions, and check us out at sparkandstitchinstitute.com. Most importantly, be in touch. What do you need? What do you need today? What do you think you're going to need in a week? Let us know, and so that we can be responsive to what's coming up for you. So you all are juggling, but you chose to share a little bit of your time with us. And for that, we're really, really grateful. Thanks so much.